This is The Guardian.
I'm Noor Haider, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is the full story. 10 years ago this week, 227 people boarded a commercial flight at Malaysia's main international airport, bound for Beijing, China. It should have been a six-hour journey.
Malaysian 370, contact Ho Chi Minh 120.99.
Good night, Malaysian 370.
But Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 never reached its destination.
Breaking news tonight, a Malaysia Airlines flight with 239 people on board has gone missing. At this hour, a desperate search is underway for MH Flight 370.
Sophisticated air and sea searches spanning years failed to find the jetliner. And a decade on, what exactly happened on that night remains one of aviation's most enduring mysteries.
We so wish that we had been able to recover this aircraft and those that lost their lives on board.
But this week, the Malaysian government delivered some hope, revealing that it may reopen the search. So could families finally get the answers they've been looking for? Today, the disappearance of MH370. It's Thursday, the 7th of March.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
So, Tori, can you take us back to the 8th of March 2014 and remind us of what happened on that day?
So on the 8th of March 2014, MH370, a Boeing 777, took off from Kuala Lumpur for Beijing.
Tori Shepherd is a senior reporter with Guardian Australia.
And about 38 minutes into that flight, it dropped off the radar. And for me, this is such a spooky moment because up until that moment, you know, you can picture people kind of settling into the flight, you know, maybe putting on their compression socks, thinking about where they're going to eat. It's dark outside.
This is very rare. For an airplane to disappear is not normal. I think we have at this hour every reason to expect that this is not going to be a good outcome.
And then something happened. And it dropped off the radar, and that's the last anyone ever heard from MH370, apart from a few ghostly pings, which indicated that it probably went on for a little while, turned around, flew until it ran out of fuel, and then plunged into the ocean. So there were 239 people on board. That was 12 crew and 227 passengers, mostly Chinese nationals. There were also 50 from Malaysia and 7 from Australia. So 10 years on, we still don't know what happened.
So once flight MH370 disappears off the radar, extensive search begins. Can you tell us about the search efforts that took place in the days, weeks, months, and even years that followed?
So Malaysia, as the government responsible for the airline, was searching initially around the South China Sea. This was before we realised that it had turned around. And then as more information came in, they worked out that it was actually more likely that the plane had gone down somewhere between WA and Antarctica. And so at that point, Australia led a joint search in that area, and I mean, it was massive. It covered 120,000 square kilometres of seafloor, and it cost $180 million, which was paid for by Australia and Malaysia. I mean, they seem like big numbers, but I guess 120,000 square kilometres in the scope of the entire Earth, and 180 million in the scope of all those missing people and all that pain for the families, maybe it's not actually that much. At the time, Australia's Prime Minister, of course, was Tony Abbott, and he spoke alongside the Prime Minister of Malaysia at the time, Najib Razak, about the disappearance.
This is probably the most difficult search ever undertaken, but I can assure people that the best brains in the world are working on this and working on the basis of just small pieces of information. We are putting the jigsaw together.
I know that until we find a plane, many families cannot start to grieve. I cannot imagine what they must be going through. But I can promise them that we will not give up.
And then debris started washing up, and that's when even more confusion crept in, because while debris washed up was shown to be from MH370, you were getting news of people finding odd bits in different places that would indicate a different crash spot. But what that debris did in the end was it did help modellers from the CSIRO do a better job of kind of tracking where it might have gone down. And so that search went on for 3 years, and it was obviously unsuccessful. And all that time, these people don't know what happened. No one got closure. And then Ocean Infinity, which is a marine robotics company, said they would pick up the search on a no-find, no-fee basis, which I guess many people speculated at the time was a lovely thing to do, but also would be very good PR if they managed to pinpoint the source of the crash. So they also carried out another unsuccessful search. And there are a lot of people who never gave up. There are a lot of people still looking at data, looking at where that debris turned up, theorising about how MH370 went down, whether someone was involved, whether it was deliberate. There are all sorts of theories about where it could have ended up.
Those big multinational searches failed to give any conclusive answers about what happened. But what were some of the ideas that were put forward?
First of all, I guess, was the human motivation behind what happened. Initially, a lot of people suspected a murder-suicide, a sort of terror plot by the pilot, Zahari Ahmed Shah. There was some evidence that he had a flight training program in his home flight simulator that showed a plane potentially landing in that area. But his family has consistently insisted that that would be out of character. He had a family in Penang, and the Malaysian government has also rejected that idea. And then there are a lot of theories about if it was deliberate, would it have gone down faster because it was deliberate? And if not, would it have gone into sort of a long, slow glide? And you can imagine with the speed a plane travels at, that makes a huge difference to where it would have gone once it came down off its flight path. And then the investigators in general think that probably all the oxygen would have been sucked out of the aeroplane at some point, not necessarily mechanically, but possibly as it started ditching, which means that everyone would have been unconscious, including the pilot. So there's a lot of theories and not a lot of answers.
So in the absence of concrete answers, conspiracy theories have flourished, some more implausible than others. Can you take us through some of the wilder theories that have emerged over the years?
Sure. And I've got to say, I get angry at people spreading conspiracy theories, but on another level, I guess I understand why people are so desperate for answers, and thanks to the internet, they can imagine that they have found them. Some of the wilder ones include an errant black hole somehow entering Earth's atmosphere and sucking it up. There's an alien abduction theory, because there is always an alien abduction theory. I read one quite sweet theory, which was that voluntarily everyone on board decided to land inside a dormant volcano, and because that volcano had very fecund Earth, they managed to create a sustainable ecosystem with food and water and are living happily in some kind of utopia, which is certainly a much nicer end than those proposed by the others. There is theories about Russia, Iran, North Korea doing something deliberately. And of course, as with all conspiracy theories, behind that is the idea that a government or government somewhere somehow had to cover it all up.
Yeah. It is hard, Tori, to grasp how a large commercial aircraft can seemingly vanish with little trace. Is that the appeal of conspiracy theories, that they help us make sense of the unimaginable?
I think that's what our brain does. I mean, I've felt my brain do it when I've been trying to work out what's gone on, and in the absence of sound knowledge, your brain wants certainty. It wants a story to tell itself. And the brain also abhors the idea of complete random tragedy. So yeah, that's why I've got more sympathy, I guess, now for people who believe in it than perhaps I used to, because they're seeking reassurance and some way of understanding the world when at this stage all we have is this kind of immense tragedy with no explanation for it.
So, Tori, what are the families doing to mark the anniversary?
Well, I imagine all the families would have their own rituals and moments of reflection and so on. But there was also a really moving candlelight vigil in KL where a bunch of the families came together. They heard from various speakers. They lit candles for each person that had gone missing. And at that same vigil, Malaysia's transport minister also spoke. He said that the government was steadfast in its resolve to find MH370.
As far as Malaysian government is concerned, we are committed to that search, and the search must go on. I'm very, very confident that the government of Malaysia and the cabinet will approve such proposal.
And you can see how, if it was, you know, your father, mother, child on that plane, why can't you just keep looking? Keep looking until you find something. Why did we stop? The families also have fairly consistently said that for them it's not about history, it's about the future, it's about flight safety and making sure nothing like this ever happens again.
Mm. And some have pursued legal action, haven't they?
Yeah, there have been a range of claims for compensation. I think Malaysia paid out fairly pitiful bits of compensation earlier on. In China, because most of the people involved were Chinese nationals, there have been huge compensation claims for millions of dollars, which are still going through the courts there. But at the same time, I think more than that, when you watch the conversations they're having and you see the memorials and so on, they would talk far more about closure than cash.
Next, Malaysia in talks over a new search.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tori, Tori, this week at the ASEAN summit in Melbourne, Anthony Albanese and the Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim were asked about the possibility of a new search, and Ibrahim said,
"If there are compelling case evidence that need to be reopened, we will certainly be happy to reopen, because I don't think it's an issue of a tactical or technical issue. It is an issue of affecting lives of people, and whatever need to be done must be done."
So what do we know about the potential new search?
This all unfolded fairly quickly over a couple of days. And until now, the Malaysian government's consistent line has been, until there is compelling new evidence, we're not going to restart another search. And it sounds like it's possible they now have that compelling evidence.
So the American firm Ocean Infinity tried and failed in 2018 to find MH370. They could be contracted to undertake this new search effort. What have they said?
So Ocean Infinity have said several times that they would be keen to do a new search, but it's been dependent on the Malaysian government. But what happened this time was they put together a submission to the Malaysian government, and the CEO, Oliver Plunkett, said they were really hopeful it would happen this year. He said they remain interested, they're actively engaged in trying to make it happen, and they feel in a position to be able to return to the search. And again, that's on that no fine, no fee basis. And separately, they've talked about how much the technology has improved since that 2018 search. So it's looking, you know, for the first time in years, quite positive that there will be a new search.
So as you mentioned earlier, some debris has been found along the coast of Africa and on islands in the Indian Ocean. After 10 years at the bottom of the ocean, would MH370 be recognisable? Would it still be intact?
This is one of the known unknowns, I think. It depends what it landed in, because the acidity, if it's surrounded by silt, that acidity could eat away at that aluminium casing. But then, it's possible if it landed somewhere where maybe the currents weren't too strong, the pH of the water was just right, it's possible it could be preserved. But we also know that the windows would have blown out. So we're not talking about a perfectly preserved tube. It would be a shell. But the important thing then is the black box recorder, the flight recorder, which would have taken down the data of what happened, unless somehow that was disabled. But if not, that is the magic box that we are looking for, and we don't know how long that might have survived. But I was talking to Peter Foley, who was the leader of the initial search on the Australian side, and he was saying the longer you leave a search, the less chance that we'd get anything out of that, which means the less chance we get the answers.
Have there been any improvements to either aviation safety or navigation as a result of this disaster?
Well, yeah. I mean, even though nobody's directly blaming air traffic control, but at the same time, there was a thorough investigation which did pick up some things that were not ideal, such as people not necessarily realising quickly enough that the plane had gone off the radar and so on. So in Europe and the UK, there are now mandates for underwater safety beacons, which help teams locate survivors. Now they have to transmit at full strength for at least 90 days. That was only originally 30 days. So you can see how in certain scenarios, like let's say there was a crash landing and somehow survivors washed up on an island or were somehow still alive, how that would help. And there are also some efforts to have cockpit voice recorders retain 25 hours of data instead of just two, and for improvements to those black box recorders, which, you know, would not have helped with MH370, but you can see how in the future, if it's, you know, if they're better protected from the environment under the ocean, if they've got more data and so on, that if this did happen again, we'd have a better chance of getting the full story.
Mm. So 10 years on from that fateful night, what hope is there that this mystery can be resolved and that the families can get closure?
You know, I can see there is a lot of hope out there. The families, some of them appeared so jubilant that the search will go on.
I'm on top of the world. You know, it's what we wanted to hear, and we hoped for that for a very long time.
And I think probably in part that is hope that they will get answers, but also, you know, relief that they're not, they don't feel forgotten, that they don't feel like the world's moved on while they're still stuck wondering what happened.
The only option is to, you know, have an active search based on whatever information that we get or whatever refinement that has been made. At some point in time, they will find. But whether it's in my lifetime, we cannot say.
I think a lot of the answers to the chances will be contained in that submission from Ocean Infinity, because what we don't know is exact details about their improved technology. We know that the more data you have, the more you can, in some cases, narrow the search area down, but in other cases, broaden it out as well, because you open up the possibilities that it may have, the plane may have glided for further than we previously thought. A lot will depend on whether it is sort of deep in a rift, as some think, because not only does that make it harder to find, but it makes it bloody hard to retrieve something like one of those black box recorders. So yeah, still a lot of unknowns, but for the families for now, hope that at least the search will be carried out.
One day, there'll be someone will come forward and tell us what really going on, the truth. That's all we want until we're longing for that, yeah, until today.
That was Intan Maizura Otiman, the wife of one of the stewards who was on board flight MH370. And before that, you heard from senior reporter for Guardian Australia, Tori Shepherd. You can find more of her work on theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Camilla Hannan and Daniel Simo, who also did the sound design and mix. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Noor Haidar. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.